Okay, no problem. Well, good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett, and I'm net control for today, December 22nd, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is a designated emergency frequency, so we'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with a particular emphasis on the COVID-19 pandemic and its news updates. All amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions during the net. When you check in tonight, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically, and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. I want to start with first to see if there's anybody on Echolink who would like to check in. Echolink users for the emergency prep net, come now.
W7NAT, Nate.
Okay, there's Whiskey 7, November Alpha Tango, Nate. Got you checked in. All right, we can take general check-ins. I didn't really hear anybody on the Echo link there, but yeah, we'll just go ahead and take general check-ins. There's Nate. Anybody else?
Hi, Brett. Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve, Albany, on a handheld.
Good evening. This is Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Okay, well, there's Richard, Whiskey 0, Echo Delta Foxtrot, and Art. Kilo Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango. And it was Steve in Albany, Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike. Got you guys checked in. We'll go ahead and actually check in Dan, who was talking there, Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. I'll even put Kevin on there too, because he was talking on there before. He'll probably come back. All right, anybody else for the emergency prep net? This is the emergency prep net, and we're taking check-ins. Same old, right? We can talk about something else if you want, but I was just going to... There are some updates on the vaccines, and people probably have questions about mutations and things like that, which we might be able to address within what I've been reading about. You just want to listen, that's fine. But we can talk about something else, too. We can talk about winter driving. Dan can talk about driving with his radar system on his truck in the fog. Whatever you'd like to talk about. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Well, we are taking check-ins, but there is only 7 of us out there right now, so I'll just wait a little bit longer, then we'll do some just general announcements for the repeater, and then we'll get on to just updates on the vaccine and the virus and the numbers. So looking a little bit better for us in Oregon this week, which is nice. So anyway, we're doing better than the rest of the country, it looks like now. Anybody else want to check in for the emergency prep net?
This is Kevin, call for Denver, India, Steve in Almsville.
Well, there's Steve, Whiskey 7, Golf, November, India, and he might have doubled with someone. Let's see who, if there was a double.
Okay, 6 here, Tango X-ray.
There's Dan, Kilo 6, Sierra Tango X-ray. Welcome, welcome. Okay, we're getting there. That's 9 of us so far. Anybody else?
Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, and Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Alan Jennifer, South Salem.
There's Alan and Jennifer, Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Hotel, and Kilo India 7, Foxtrot Whiskey Papa, Jennifer. Very good. Okay. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, and I guess we can do some general announcements for the repeater now. If anybody wants to do general announcements, or maybe Dan's out there wants to do an announcement, come now, please.
WA7ABU.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, the next evening net on this repeater would be the slow scan net on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. So be sure and bring your pictures, and we'd like to see what you've got. Back to you, Brett, WA7ABU.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm trying to decide whether, you know, my family will get mad at me if I do the Thursday night. It is Christmas Eve, or some people, celebrate on Christmas Eve. I'm not sure what we're supposed to do on Christmas Eve. Sometimes we're having a dinner. Sometimes we're wrapping presents. It's often a busy night. So, anyway, it might be an abbreviated net on Thursday night as far as the mesh net goes, but, of course, I can't make it, guys, and always just talk about mesh networking and progress that we're making. Anyway, that's Thursday at 7 o'clock as well. Don't forget our TechNet tomorrow. We talk about TechNet stuff at 10 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday. And again, I don't know if there's going to be a Friday morning TechNet or not. Dan, that's up to you. You could, you know, bow out of that if you want. It is Christmas, so I don't know. What do you think about Friday morning there, Dan? Are you going to do it or not?
I'll probably be around. It's fun to see what people have got to say.
Okay, well, you can make it a special net where people are only checking in if they got a new radio thing under the tree there for themselves, huh? Anyway, we've been doing pretty good with our nets. That Heritage Net on Monday night's kind of fun. That was been well attended. They seem to have some good topics, technical topics, historical topics. Kind of fun to listen to. That's Monday nights at 7. So lots going on. The kids' net was 5:30 today. That's good. The youth net, I should say. They're not all kids. They could be. As a matter of fact, there's quite a few people, adults, that are guessing on the jokes. And anyway, very good. Well, are there any other announcements for the net? Come now, please. Okay, well, I'll get into the Oregon statistics news for our COVID status reports. And I look at these things, I think that the dashboards that they're having at the Oregon Health Authority are getting more and more complicated. There's all kinds of different ones. But there's a simple one that's on OregonLive.com, and it's got, again, the same numbers. A little easier to sort out. There's fewer things to look at once. The average new cases per day reported today was 1,282 cases, 35 deaths today. We had a report here that we that they've released some details on the vaccinations. We've received more. They gave us more vaccine. We've been actually, it says delivered 7,203 doses of vaccine. Doesn't say where here on this, but that's the current number of vaccines. Looks like I'm looking at the numbers here. We are slowing down a little bit on the case count, and the thing I'm always look at is the hospitalization rate, because I think that's the important one for us. It is down this week. It's 528 today, and that's down from last week when we were, let's see, we were on the 15th before. That was 544, so we're down on the total number of hospitalized. The number of people in the ICU is at 121. That's about the same. People, you know, once you get in the ICU, tend to hang out in the ICU for a while. But we still have capacity there. Anyway, yeah, and the variety of ages of people that passed away, a lot of old people still. Anyway, the Oregon dashboard talks about who got the vaccine in terms of demography, the ages of people. Looks like we haven't actually given the vaccine to very many people over the age of 80. It looks like they're probably focusing on the healthcare workers here. It shows that they've given the most vaccine in the ages of 30 to 49 group. That's like 4,200 people out of almost 4,300 people in that 30 to 49 age group. And another 1,300 in the 50 to 59. Actually vaccinated six people from ages 6 to 19. Only 58 people from 70 to 79, and one person is over 80. So it looks like we're not focusing yet on the over 80 population. Okay, so let's see. The news of the day that the Moderna vaccine has shipped to Oregon, and I did read something that it was received at the Oregon State Hospital, which is good. Maybe Tim might check in on you. He might know something about that. And they're going to be, you know, start vaccinating people, the healthcare workers at the Oregon State Hospital. So that's good. In the meantime, we've had the approval of the Moderna vaccine, very, very similar to the Pfizer vaccine in its mode of action. It is an mRNA vaccine. If you have any questions about that, I'm pretty up on how it works. They probably are. The nice thing about this one, and it's already pre-measured. There's 10 doses per vial. You get a 0.5 ml dose shot. So 10 doses per bottle, and they only need to be kept at normal freezer temperature and then refrigerated after that. So it's pretty easy to get them out to places that don't have the fancy minus 70 freezers or dry ice supply, so it'll be a lot easier to get it out to rural areas. And that's good news. It looks like that again in the studies and with the approval that they are similar in terms of their efficacy, in terms of their ability to prevent the at least the numbers of people getting COVID. That's going to increase the supply of vaccine for people more quickly, and that's good news. Are there any questions about those Moderna vaccine or that update?
WA7ABU.
Yeah, Dan, go ahead.
I'm a little disappointed in the speed and the number of doses. I was invited to a seminar where basically they wanted everybody to come out to the doctor's clinic one day, and they offered several different days they were doing it. And I took, I think, an hour and a half or something off and did it on the job. This was probably about 6 or 8 years ago. And when I arrived, I was a little shocked at the length of the line, and I almost left thinking, you know, there's no way in the world they could do this much. And they treated, right around 50 people while I was standing there. The line went fast, and they were done just like that. Before I got out of the parking lot, I suspect they had treated 100 people for the flu at that time. What's taken these people so long? WA7ABU?
Yeah, KD7GDB. Well, again, that's a logistical thing. The first part, so just nationally, they say that we actually have been doing pretty well. If, you know, looking at the news report here today, it says that more than 614,000 people have received a dose of the Pfizer vaccine. Okay, it says they've delivered enough so that 4.6 million people could receive a first dose, is what they say in this article. And, in Oregon, we have our little dashboard here. It shows that we started giving the vaccine, I don't know where to find it again, I have it here. I think on Tuesday last week. Let me look at this. Hold on just a second. Find it. Okay, so yeah, in Oregon, and I don't know where they're having it, but the, you know, on the 16th, they delivered the first 254 doses, and then there were like 434 the next day, and 1735 on the 18th, and then the 19th it was 7,000, and 1100 on the 20th, and 2500 yesterday. So they haven't, you know, said how many today. So we're getting better, I don't know if you think about it. Logistically, how that happens. Let's see, that's statewide. Let's see if I got countywide here. Some county data here on this. It looks like Marion County has 691 people vaccinated. Multnomah County has done 2,000 people. So, you know, again, Polk County has done 181 people. So it probably has to do a lot with, how many staff we can throw at it. This is something that... You've got the Pfizer vaccine. It's going to be a hospital that has one of these very ultra-cold freezer facilities, and then you've got to have, you're trying to vaccinate the people that are working in the health field, and mostly the ones at the hospital first. So imagine the big hospitals with bigger staffs are going to get done more quickly. So I imagine, I don't know, people who do logistics, people who've been in the military, you know, doing something like this. I don't know. They'll have, it requires a lot of coordination to get a lot of vaccines out. And they do want to observe these people because of some people have come down with an allergic reaction. They want to observe you for like 15 minutes after you've had the vaccine. So that may be another slowing factor. I imagine it'll get better as we gear up the staff and the flow through. But right now, I don't know how many people a hospital can process like that. Sounds like this is the aggregate data that we have here. But if anyone else knows, I can't tell you the details. Looks like I found, the dashboard on the health authority, you can see that, they supposedly gave 127 doses yesterday and 103 the day before. So I suspect that's happening at Salem Hospital, if you think about it. How fast can you do it, and what sort of facility do they have, in order to do it? It's a logistics issue, so... Anyway, as we get more vaccine, of course they're going to try to use it. So that's the good thing. Other states like Texas are going gangbusters on getting their vaccine out a lot faster. Getting vaccines out in Texas. Some places haven't reported at all. I don't know whether they got it or not. Like Florida hasn't reported any of their data yet. They're just being not, secretive or something. Or they don't want to report. But yeah, Texas has given 15,000 doses. New York's given 19,000 doses.
W7NAT.
Nate, go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, I wonder if they've started on the old people's homes already.
Well, my guess is no, because, well, you have to look at the data here, but it says only one, just a few people. It shows the ages of the people who've gotten it, and the age so far, there's been 58 people, 70 to 79. So I guess the answer is yes. One person over the age of 80. So, it doesn't tell you whether that's statewide. It doesn't tell you whether there are, people who volunteer at the hospital or not, or whether they're in a nursing home. It doesn't tell me that. That's what we have so far.
I guess most of us 80-year-old people are at home then.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that the priority from what I've heard, and again, Oregon can decide how they want to do it differently than other states, but I think we're following what the general recommendation is to try to vaccinate people who are the most at risk, and those are the ones that are in facilities, long-term care facilities. To hear something about that the VA system was going to get a lot of doses, and there's some VA long-term care facilities in Oregon that will be getting vaccinated. So, yeah, people who are in a facility are going to be more at risk, and that's where, those people have been the ones that have suffered the most in terms of the number of deaths, because they're indoors all the time and they can't really escape it. So, anyway, I think that they'll probably get around to those next, but they're starting first with these, it looks like with hospitals. But with that Moderna vaccine, they'll be able to get, that out more easily to different areas, much more widespread areas.
I wonder if us guys that are over 80 might somehow know when we could even ask for the vaccine.
Yeah, I don't know yet. Can't answer that question. There's sort of general questions about that. It depends on how our state is handling it entirely. We haven't used up the vaccine that we have yet. So we'll find out. Again, the more vaccine we get, the faster it will be, and it may be a couple months before they get to the general public. But I was reading one place where they decided that, they just would open it up to, they said the next group would be ages 75 and up. That was sort of a general nationwide kind of plan after they get the 80 and older and ones in the at risk in the long-term care facilities. So anyway, I suspect that your age group would go before the 50-year-olds will by far. Anyway, the good news is that we are not going up and up like we were last week, which is good. That's the case numbers are going down a little bit, and the hospitalization numbers are going down. And actually we're doing better than a lot of the places around the country. So that's good news. You're all listening to this Tuesday night broadcast and doing exactly what makes sense, okay? Which is, no, don't take any trips to Great Britain, right? Okay, let's see if there's a break here. This is Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. This is the emergency prep net. We've sort of gone over the numbers here in Oregon. We're looking okay so far, but still not out of the woods yet. But, trending flatter now, which is good. Are there any check-ins at this point, or comments, or questions?
Question, K6FTX.
Go ahead, Dan. I'll do my best.
Okay, a couple of things. First of all, when they give these people a shot, are they holding in reserve enough of the stuff to give them a second shot, or are they anticipating the second shot will be on a different batch that's going to come in later? In other words, are they holding back half of the stuff that they're getting, or are they think they're just going to give everybody a shot and then hope they get more later?
Okay, yeah, so I think that's part of the logistics planning. I think they are, that's why they're not shipping it all out at once. They're shipping out enough for a first dose, and then in an ideal world, you want to get the second dose of the same type of vaccine, okay? And so if you get the Pfizer one, you should get you're supposed to get the Pfizer one, 21 days from now, a second one. And that would be, now again, if you are part of a facility with the Pfizer ones, they can hold those in cold storage and not thaw them out. Once they're thawed out, you've got to use the doses that are in the bottle. They only last about 6 hours. So, yeah, you're not going to, but the bottles that are frozen, I think there are lots of 975 or bottles or doses, I guess, in a package. And they have those, in frozen away, and then you take them out and you put saline in them to dilute them, and then you start injecting people. So if you were to keep those, you would want to keep. Again, we're expecting more, but yes, you want to make sure you have the people come back and get the same vaccine 21 days later for the Pfizer vaccine. Now, if you get the Moderna vaccine, which is just arriving this week, and supposedly they've done, some people at the state hospital, that they would need to get the Moderna vaccine again later. And that one lasts a little longer, but it's still supposed to be 28 days later that you get that second dose, so it's a little easier to handle and keep on hand. But I think that they are depending on the supplies being shipped weekly. They get weekly shipments, and I've heard that will be part of the plan, is that you will reorder for your next week based on what you've given the first week, so they make sure that matches. If anybody heard anything different, let me know.
Yeah, I'm not sure you answered my question. Again, the question is, are they holding back the second dose to make sure they have the second dose when they give the first one? Or are they just relying that maybe the second dose is going to show up later?
Okay, yeah. I think it's the second one. I think they are relying on the fact that the second dose will show up later. That they're not holding, I don't think they're holding back. I think they're trying to vaccinate as many people as they can, but they don't have to, like, for instance, I don't think we're going to, the rate we're giving it in Oregon right now, we're not giving as many, we probably have more shots in the freezer than we've given, right? But they're not holding back. They're not going to say, okay, well, we're just going to keep these for 21 days. No, they're gonna give as many shots as they can and reorder and get another shipment every week is the idea. And then you are hoping that we'll be there 21 days from now, that you will come back and use that.
Okay, so that's it.
Okay, I think you doubled with there's someone there, Dan. Hold on. Who else was in there? Well, maybe not. It was just a little squeaky noise. Go ahead, Dan.
Well, if they have plenty on hand, anybody that's gone through boot camp and had their stand in line for their shots, you can know how fast they can go. So there should not be a problem, because once they get it all figured out, they ought to be able to just wholesale it, like, really quick. And whether they just want to do that or not, it's not impossible anyway, K650.
ABU?
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
The Moderna vaccine, which doesn't require the extreme refrigeration, I'll bet that that opens up possibilities like going to pharmacies. And for years, we've been getting our flu shots over at individual pharmacies like Walgreens. So I'll bet that places like that serve an awful lot of people. Like Dan's saying, that thing that I went to over there at the doctor's clinic years ago, they just had a long line, and they did have multiple people actually giving the shots. So they'd say, you go that way, and the next guy, they'd go a different direction, and third guy, another direction. They'd just be constantly turning over individuals going down the line. And part of the delay, they had to assign somebody to get the paperwork done, and the paperwork had to accompany the actual issuing of the shot. And they also did this over at Kaiser this year on the flu shot. They had provisions for taking care of a very, very long line, and they had this Disneyland-type arrangement where you zigzag through the line. And when I showed up, they had already treated hundreds of people that day, and they had six or eight different slots in the tent where you'd walk in and somebody was giving shots, and I was directed to the last one, probably because of my name. And I sat down, the guy took my paper, he said, it looks like it's all filled out, and before I knew what was going on, he wiped my arm and stuck me, and I was gone, just like that. Boy, he was really fast, and absolutely painless, because it happened so quick. WA7ABU.
Okay, yeah, good point. So again, I mentioned that this one, because it's new and it's under emergency use authorization, there's a couple things that are a little different about this. We have to because of the people who had allergic reactions, they are observing people for a while after they get the dose. I mean, they're probably going to know how it actually works. Somebody came on who actually got the vaccine, but I imagine that they give you the vaccine and then they have you go sit over in a waiting room for 10 minutes and make sure you're not going to have any reaction while you're still in the hospital. Okay. Again, we would have these safety issues kind of worked out. If it's not happening very often, then yes, you could probably do it at Walgreens or whatever. That would be great. Now, what they just looking at the little article here about announcements from our governor. She announced today that she says that over 350,000 people in the priority categories have yet to be vaccinated before they move on to other groups. So they said in our priority groups are frontline workers and people 75 or older. So they're talking about healthcare staff, senior care residents, workers get the vaccine first. And they say that applies to 350,000 people first. And then they say that the next group they're looking at is probably educators and frontline workers in other fields and people 75 or over. And says they will decide by mid-February which groups will be prioritized. So that sounds like that's the kind of the time scale they're thinking about for the second group wave of vaccines. So we'll have to see how that goes. You need to get apparently people get a little card that reminds them that they need to come back. And again, it's going to be 28 days that you come back after the Moderna one versus the 21 Pfizer. So we'll tell you the kind of vaccine you got and when you're supposed to return. And then, of course, you would have numbers on there to contact anyone if you had any adverse events. You want to report those. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. We're talking about vaccinations. Okay, I suspect there's also maybe some screening that goes on, too. Like if they say, oh, have you ever had an allergic reaction to a vaccine or something like that, you might not be included in the group. I don't, again, if you were, it's voluntary, but at the same time, they would have you, you would have to take that, they would have to give you an informed consent for it. So, anyway, it's a... Going to take a while to get through the 350,000 people, but we got 7,200 so far, so that's good, and hopefully that number will go up. Again, as we get move away from the hospitals and start going out to clinics or places like that, we should be able to get more people done if we can move along. It says the state will have received 72,100 doses of Moderna by the end of the week, along with 25,000 next week, according to Oregon Health Authority, Patrick Allen.
W7ABU.
Dan, go ahead, please.
Maybe that's a number you have access to. I'm wondering if Moderna is going to be able to deliver more to Oregon than the initial numbers we had from the other vaccine. I wonder if both are going to come out in about the same numbers like I heard originally, or have they revised that, WA7ABU?
Yeah, so there are some trackers about how many doses were given here, the sort of national ones and what have you. I'm trying to find here. Okay, there's another... they are tracking where the vaccines are going, and I think they're working out the bugs of doing that. But the Moderna one just shipped. I mean, just started shipping, so that's great. It's already here, and it was approved on Friday. It's Tuesday. It's already here, and they're already starting to give it. So that's pretty good. It means that they're, at least Moderna was ready to go with their stuff. Again, we have to figure out whether our supply chain and our, you know, contracts and all that kind of thing, you know, that there was a, I should just mention that this warp speed thing, there's a issue that they basically, with Moderna, it was supported, you know, the government basically supported the research, they supported the, development, and everything at the government level is supporting the manufacture and distribution of these things. What they're not supporting is the actual delivery of the vaccine at the state. That's up to the states to figure out who's going to do it, how it gets delivered, all that. That part of it's not funded. There's a certain number that they have agreed to buy at a certain amount of time, and so we'll see if these guys can meet the demand. Now, Pfizer has to deliver the goods to the rest of the world. They've only signed up for a certain number of doses, I think, and that's one of the problems that they're running into is that they want more Pfizer stuff, and Pfizer said, well, sorry, we're making it for the rest of the world now, and we need more supplies if we want to make more for you. That's what I was reading today. Anyway, remember when they say doses on these things that you need two doses. So you divide any dose things that they send us by two to get the number of people who are going to get the medication there. Anyway, that enough questions about it. It does say that Walgreens and CVS are launching a coronavirus vaccination drive across Oregon senior care homes this week. It's working directly with facilities to set up injection sites. First shots were given Monday, it says, at Rose Villa. I don't know where that is. So probably, anyway, if you're right about that. Apparently they're going to go actually help deliver them at the senior living centers.
K1VIN, I'm back in the car with my question again.
Hello, Kevin. Go ahead with your question.
Have they given any insight of how they're going to be contacting the frontline workers? My brother's an EMT over in Dallas and hasn't been offered yet. Do you know how they're planning on doing that? If they're just going to notify through the department, or what do you know? K1VIN.
No, I'm sorry. I don't know how they're... It doesn't say how that is going. It does list the numbers of these... it probably is. I'm going to guess that it's based on the relationship with the facility. Okay, so that's probably a very good question for like Salem Health, because Salem Health will be the ones that would be giving the vaccine in Marion County, and Salem Health has got the Dallas Hospital there too. So. Now, I don't know, they have the contracted EMT, I think it's Falk ambulance things, but those people would probably, again, be considered more like the hospital staff, I would think. But that, again, is up to the facility as to, who goes first. They So I would tell them to ask those questions of their supervisors and see.
Yeah, imagine next time he goes to the hospital there, even in Dallas, he could ask that question. So I'll kind of pass the word there and see what he comes up with. He's very interested in getting it because he's, sole income for the household, and it would be detrimental if he got sick. So being 2 weeks without pay would kind of put a pretty big strain on somebody that's a single household income. So thanks for the info there, Brett. K1VIN.
Yeah, I'm not in charge, but I would think that someone who like that is a frontline healthcare worker that would be in the first group anyway that would be up there. So it's just a matter of how fast can they do it. And I was I'm looking here. They have done Polk County. It says it's vaccinated 181 people. So again, that's probably based on that facility. It's like they gave 30 vaccines yesterday. That's not a lot, but I don't know what the staff. Staffing is over there in, let's say, Dallas Hospital. But it's getting here, and that's the good news. So a couple things that I've been reading that's important for people to remember, that even when we get the vaccine, you still actually have to be masked. You can't, one dose of the vaccine isn't enough. And there's a couple of things about the way that they did the studies that would be nice if they'd done a complete study. And this is why we get these accelerated studies. But let me explain. Like some people were saying, well, I still have to wear a mask after I get vaccinated. And the answer is yes, you will. And here's why. And, it has to do with we don't know what's really happening. Okay, so when they do these vaccine trials, the way that they were set up, and I read the summaries of them, what they were primarily looking at is you had to have at least 30,000 people, and you had to show an efficacy that between the vaccine and a placebo vaccine of greater than 50%. Okay, and you had to have a safety thing, show that it was safe, and those were the main criterion. Okay, so it's like, could you show that? Yeah, there was a really difference in the number of people that got COVID in the control group versus the treated group, and that you didn't see any bad side effects. Okay, that's the main criteria for getting authorization to do the vaccine. Okay, now beyond that, it doesn't look like they had to do anything like figure out whether, how many people in the general group, were there anybody that was asymptomatic? They didn't look at people who were asymptomatic. They didn't test everyone, all the 30,000 people. Seemed like that would have been nice to test them for COVID, whether they were symptomatic or not, every once in a while. That wasn't part of the authorization plan, so it wasn't done. Okay. Also, it didn't really exclude people who had a previous infection of COVID. Again, they wanted to look at a sort of a cross-section of people. There could have been people who had COVID in there who were immune to it. And but again, unless you showed up and said they're waiting around for people to say, hey, I've got COVID-like symptoms, and they tested them. And they waited until they had, 190 people or so in order to get an idea of whether out of that number you had a statistically different response between the two groups, okay? So, people got COVID in both groups, but if the number of people who got COVID from the vaccinating group was much, much, much lower, so they call that 95% effective, that was, or efficacious, that was really good, and it doesn't seem to give you any bad side effects. That's really good. Much better than what we thought it was going to do. But the questions that we didn't answer in the preliminary studies are what has lead us to say, well, how immune are you? What's going to happen after you get vaccinated? All we know now is that you probably are not going to get as sick or not get sick at all from being vaccinated. Don't know whether you would be asymptomatic or whether you could still pass on the virus, because that was not studied. Does that make sense? So just keep the, I'm just trying to tell you a little bit about when I read between the lines as a, former science person, I look at why is this, okay? And so if we had studied everybody and in the group and said, hey, tested them for COVID after receiving the final vaccines, went ahead and did COVID tests on everybody, that might give us an idea of, or tested for antibodies, whether or not, how many people had antibodies and whether or not they had any active infections, so that would have been nice. Now, not knowing that, that means we do know that you need the two vaccines in order to get the full immunity. After the first vaccine, there wasn't as big of a difference, apparently. And so you have to wait till you have the second vaccine before you're done. We don't know, again, how long. We know that for a couple months, people are fine, So because the trial hasn't finished, it's supposed to go for 6 months. It's got approved before the 6 months is up. So, again, this is so new that we know it helps, and we're going to give it because it's on an emergency basis to try to see if we can, help stop the spread of this in the healthcare workers right now, so that we can continue to take care of people. All right, but what we want to find out is, hopefully that people end up with a immunity that lasts for like a year. That would be really great if that would be the case, or longer. We also would maybe help that that people wouldn't be infective, that they wouldn't have any asymptomatic people that would show up active COVID infections after being vaccinated. Again, we won't know that unless we do a sort of more random survey type testing. So. In the meantime, that means you still have to be treated as if you could potentially still be an asymptomatic carrier, and that's why we wear the masks. Okay, it's Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. Let's see, would you like to talk about mutations? Mutations are in the news as far as Britain goes. I guess I wouldn't get too excited about the mutations yet. Apparently, let me give you a little bit of a background here on the mutation thing. So apparently, the United Kingdom has some of the best geneticists around, and they have really good genetics testing going on all the time of the coronavirus. And what they determined, what's in the news lately that you'll see about, is that in September they identified a variant of COVID, which is a new strain, and it seems to be that when they're looking at now that they've identified that strain, that strain seems to be the one that's sort of taking off and making most of the cases that they are identifying in the United Kingdom, okay? Now, we don't know, and they're quick to point this out, we don't know that it makes it any worse for you. It just does. It seems to be out-competing the other strains. Again, with all the other behavioral things going on, the travel and holidays and things like that, and that you know, there's a lot of confounding factors in terms of whether it might be that this variant is more infective. That is the hypothesis right now, and that's what we're going to try to find out. In other words, it spreads more easily than the previous variant, but it is showing in their studies in the United Kingdom that it is becoming the more dominant form from the strain that they had identified before that, prior to September 20th. So anyway, now the world is all sort of excited about, well, you know, geez, there's a strain there, there's a strain in South Africa, and this is but we don't know anything about whether it causes worse disease, whether it, it's somehow as a result of, just natural selection. These things, they say the longer they are in a body, the more likely they are to mutate. So they have quite a database of genome sequences in the UK, and they're experts on this stuff. But it's again too soon to tell whether this is something to worry about. But people are still traveling around, and if we have a new variant, we have a new variant. So again, they're just looking at the sequence of the genome of the virus, and they're showing that there was a mutation, and that particular strain is more predominant in their testing right now. So if it outcompetes the other one, might outcompete the other one, but we don't know because whether it is going to change our vaccine or the efficacy of our vaccine or anything like that yet. That would be the, people would worry, but again, too soon to tell. They said all likelihood it means again that you have to, it doesn't entirely explain why the United Kingdom's rates are up any more than us or anyone else, because there's been a lot of change in behavior. People are tired of this stuff, and they're traveling more, and they're going indoors because it's cold, and that's causing increases in cases, probably more than the new strain. Okay, anyway, that's probably. Are there any other check-ins for the net tonight? We're talking a lot about the COVID vaccines and the new strain here. Still recommend that you get, again, when you read something in the news, go ahead and try to find the actual source on the on a website that gives you the link to the scientific article. I did find I've been following the University of Washington has what they call their COVID situation report, COVID-19 literature situation report, and I try to read those things. And they did put out a very good summary, which came out, has to do with indoor recommendations about indoor ventilation, and basically some best practices. And again, they're settling on the idea still that what we can do to improve ventilation and decrease the spread of droplets is going to help more than that is pretty much that is the evidence. Everyone agrees that the evidence is that having the best airflow, low number of people wearing masks whenever you're indoors, trying to spend less time indoors, those are all things that we can do to help. but they did put some data out about HVAC systems and whether they cause a problem or make it worse or whatever. So I can tell you a little bit about that. Okay, so the good news is that they have not found that HVAC systems themselves spread the virus. So it's not like you can have someone in one room and, you know, it'll suck the virus out and bring it into another room. They haven't found that at all. What they're saying is that they want to make sure that there is a change in room air, that seems to work better. So if you'd be able to flush the indoor air, you know, like 2 hours before and after occupancy of someone. That, again, these the particles of virus are very small, okay? They're actually smaller than, but they always travel on a droplet or a smaller aerosol particle. There's actually, they kind of divide it into two different sizes. They call it respiratory droplets, and they call that droplet transmission, which usually happens when you're in close contact within 6 feet. And then the aerosols are less than 5 microns. They're light particles, and they can remain airborne for longer, and that's responsible for the airborne transmission. The virus itself, this is only 0.1 micron, and it doesn't travel by the air by itself. So anyway, it says it's more likely, but they don't know exactly, you know, it's doing both, but they don't know exactly what the distribution of COVID is. In terms of the particle size, but it is stable for 3 to 16 hours in a laboratory in aerosol form. So that's why you need to air out the rooms. That's the main thing. And and minimize the time indoors still. But evidence that we've collected, let me get a drip here. For example, on that Diamond Princess cruise ship, that was the first cruise ship that had all the people on there, they did not find cases in the, even though they had shared air circulation, that people did not catch it through that HVAC system. That was good. Again, they haven't found anything. It says there's even thing. The University Hospital in Oregon had 25% of the samples in 9 locations had the RNA from the COVID virus in there, they were not evaluated for infectiousness. So even though you find it in the ventilation system, it doesn't seem like they're infectious. They haven't found any infectious particles in the ventilation system itself. So, they're talking about that, again, it's better to, you can use HEPA filters, that helps, but not as much as changing the air out and moving the airflow. So opening windows and doors and, moving clean air in and dirty air out. That's the basic idea. And there's a whole bunch of guidelines that's published that along with the CDC, they have a ventilation guideline. And so that's an important thing to remember, is that's something we can continue to improve on as our ventilation in our rooms. Any questions or comments on that?
This is Scott Lechek in KF7GGN, Kilo Fox 7, Golf Call, November. Also with a question on that.
Hi, Scott. Well, you're going to be one of the last ones there to check in, so go ahead with your question.
Just on that note, what about outdoors? I know we've been told many times that being outdoors is a lot safer, but what would be the general worriness level if you're just passing someone casually, maybe both wearing masks and with socially distanced, outside of 6 feet, in the fresh air.
Yeah, this particular study. So your question is, outdoors is still good, and but what we're seeing is that people are focusing on the indoor part because that seems to be increase the risk of being infected. Okay, so they particularly were talking about if you were outdoors and had close contact with a person, you're sitting at a picnic bench or whatever, and you're sitting with someone who had it, you know, you're within that, and you weren't masked, you know, you still would be at risk. It's the air, but the good thing about, you know, being outdoors is that, the air is constantly moving and changing. And so, again, if you mentioned the things that we've done during the summertime kept the it did mitigate the infections. I have no problem with wandering around outside, without a mask, as long as I'm staying away from people and keep moving around. Having a big, outdoor picnic with people I didn't know and all sitting around picnic tables, that would not be good. You know, you just have to use your good judgment on that. But it'd still be better than meeting in a banquet room. So there are all varying degrees of risk associated with it. But now we know, that if it's an aerosol thing and it goes spread by droplets and aerosols, primarily, that anything we can do to make the air flow better and to stay out of people's, COVID clouds is going to be better than if we are forced to sit nearby them. So, anyway, that's the general idea there. Any other comments?
No, thank you, Brett. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, just as I was listening to a report, I think it was on NPR, and they were talking about back in 1918 when they had the big flu epidemic in New York City, they put in a lot of steam heaters, and it's interesting, they were talking about the history of the steam heaters and how these, they put the steam heater actually under the window. And that is still a sort of standard practice, these hot steam heaters, and they were under windows, and, how that's kind of a, people in the East Coast and the Midwest have these heaters that they're just really hot, and that they're always under a window, which doesn't seem like it's very energy efficient, but what they said was that the idea was that you were supposed to keep your windows open in the winter time with these heaters going to improve the airflow. And that came about as a way of improving the airflow in rooms in that flu pandemic originally. So to see if that to read some more on that, but that does seem to make sense. So anyway, next time you're. If you get to go back east. And an old building, I remember, well, I visited the music building once at the in Chicago and at Northwestern University, and the rooms were so hot. They had these window steam heaters right below the windows. It was really, really warm in those rooms. And everybody sort of strips off all their clothes and throws them in the on hooks and then goes into their classrooms. But I thought that was interesting. Why are they so hot? But that again would raising the temperature in the room and improving the airflow. That is better for getting rid of viruses than cold rooms and closed windows. That's for sure.
Yes, that reminds me. I've been back to New York many, many times because most of my family lives in the city. And the older buildings have the radiators right under the window. And in wintertime, it was hotter than anything in those apartments. And nobody opened the windows. And I guess they just forgot that was the reason in the first place. So thanks for that, Brett, that little bit of history. Thank you.
Okay, well, it's a little after the time here, so let's go ahead and close her down for this evening. Time is now 8:06 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. I think Richard might make a recording again available for it if you care to listen to it. We'll look at FDWA7ABU groups.io page for any recordings that we put on there. They, anyway, the net meets each Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Thanks go out to Dan from WA7ABU for the use of the repeater. Thanks to everyone who checked in tonight and those who stood by to give us a clear frequency. And this is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, closing the net now 8.07 p.m. And now return the repeater to normal, undirected amateur operations. KG7GDB, I'll be clear.